Here's another great episode of the Pop Zara podcast. Enjoy it.
Summer of Cobra Kai. Cobra Kai Season 2 debuted on May 2nd on YouTube Premium, otherwise known as YouTube Red, now known as YouTube Original. We don't even know what it's called anymore, but it's Cobra Kai Season 2, the second season of the surprising smash hit that continues the legacy, continues the saga of the original Karate Kid movies, but not the Hilary Swank Karate Kid, because that doesn't count yet. Welcome back to the Pop Zara podcast. This is your host, Nathan Evans, talking about Cobra Kai Season 2. And for this, I needed to pull in my own acolyte, otherwise known as Kevin from Story Dive on YouTube. Kevin, welcome back.
Hi, how's it going? How do I sound?
You sound good, and because the last time you were here, we talked about rabbits and Watership Down. But let's get to the crux of it.
More rebooting and repackaging and, you know, reworking. But in this case, it worked out really well. Not so much with Watership Down.
I was going to say, Kevin, you record YouTube synopsis and everything, and you had a really nice video that came out a couple weeks ago, Cobra Kai Season 2. I'll say the whole thing. I'll put it out in the thing. Cobra Kai Season 2, all Easter eggs and references explained. Every one of them.
It's basically, I just put in a bunch of, you know, keywords that people, you know, that people would search for. You can just search for Cobra Kai Season 2 Easter eggs and it should come up.
There is a huge fandom of Cobra Kai on YouTube, which, no surprise, it's from YouTube. But it's pretty positive. And I want to get into that in a second, because unlike everything else that's contentious, even Avengers Endgame, there's a negative quotient to it. But that doesn't seem to be the case with Cobra Kai, and whether it's season one or season two. And we'll get into that in a second. Let's just go over the stats real quick. So for those who don't know, Cobra Kai is an original streaming show on YouTube. I'm going to get this right, Kevin. YouTube Premium. Like I said, it's very confusing.
Yeah.
Because it was a marquee show for YouTube's streaming alternative to Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime, CBS Interactive, whatever they call it. Everybody's got a streaming channel. Disney's got one coming out this year called Disney Plus, which I actually think is going to be a big thing, a big deal.
Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
I just hope it has all the old obscure Disney stuff, like, you know, Darby O'Gill and the Little People, and all just the back catalog of weirdness. Disney.
You mean the fun stuff. You know what I would love to see?
Yeah.
Song of the South. Let's put that on there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's history. You know, it's a lot of people have a lot of things to say about that, and deservedly so. Mm-hmm. But you know, it is...
That would be amazing.
It is representation of one point in time.
I will say this, though, as someone who grew up with Uncle Remus and Song of the South on videotape, I will say this. I've actually seen it, and that's more than most people can say. When I talk to people that are very offended by it, not to get off topic, I haven't met a single person who's offended that's actually watched it or seen it.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know. I wouldn't have agreed to do this podcast if I knew you were going to talk about Uncle Remus, because I'm just kidding. But
you misled me. I'm off.
I actually haven't seen it either, but you know, I do know that a lot of people have a problem with it, which, you know, I'm sure it deserves. It is interesting to me just because I'm interested in folklore and in American folklore, and I know that, you know, Briar Rabbit is an interesting folk figure that, from what I understand, is adapted from older, like, African trickster spirits that were, you know, that in America became something else, became, you know, Briar Rabbit.
Yes.
So I'm very interested in the sort of the lineage of where those stories come from. But I haven't actually seen Uncle Remus,
I will say this to end our Uncle Remus, surprising Uncle Remus discussion.
Right.
The fact is that good old Walt Disney at the time in the 1940s, he did something that nobody else was doing. And he gave a majority African-American, you know, black cast, the reins to not only voice these characters, but to tell their stories and to do this in a way that was respectful. And now to see a modern generation just poo-poo it without even looking at it and giving it the time of day is disappointing, just and you would appreciate it, as a storytelling mechanism, because these stories should not be censored because of misinformation.
And yeah, I'm definitely against censorship. It's a very kind of complex discussion, but you have to allow the truth. You have to allow access to the truth, whatever that is, whether it's good or it's bad. If you sort of like try to bury the truth, I think I'm not articulating this well, but whatever the issues were could potentially repeat themselves because, you know, people haven't learned from whatever. Oh shit, this makes no sense, but you know what I'm getting at.
Hey, look, the phrase is those who, you know, I forget who said it. You have to forgive me. I think it was Fuji. Yeah. I think it was Katayama or whatever. He said, you know, those who failed to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. But I prefer the Hegelian version of it, which is the only thing we learn from history is that we don't learn anything from history.
Right.
And I will say this, I will be neutral on the Uncle Remus question because we are here to talk about karate. We are here to talk about Karate Kid. We are here to talk about Cobra Kai. We're both fans. Let's just get this out of the way. We both like this show a lot. We've talked privately, and we're both big fans, especially of the first season.
Absolutely.
Again, the entire 10-episode season 2 is released on May 2nd, which means by about noontime on May 2nd, people had been watched the whole season, and which gave them another about 12 hours on May 2nd to watch the rest. Because I have a feeling, Kevin, that most people, when they watch this show, they digested the entire season in a day or two. Sure. I know that's what I did, and everyone I've talked to that's seen it has done the same. Yourself?
Absolutely. I mean, I had to make a video about it, so I was, I watched it as soon as it came out.
Oh, you had to. That was the excuse.
Well, I mean, sorry, I didn't have to, but I wanted to make a video about it. And so, you know, I watched it as soon as it came out, and I made notes because I knew I wanted to do an Easter egg video. And there were a lot of great Easter eggs in this one.
So it's funny because your entire video, which, again, notes in the linked in the notes, was about Easter eggs. But you've talked about the show before. But when you watch the season, let's just say this. Let's do a little synopsis of season 2, and then we'll get into spoilers. We'll give people a chance who somehow found their way to this podcast through the thick of it all. Say, oh, Mike, I didn't come here for spoilers. Well, go away. But I'll say this. So it picks up after the events of season 1. For those, again, spoilers, you had the two characters. You had Daniel LaRusso, and you had Johnny. What's Johnny's last name? Do we know?
Lawrence.
Johnny Lawrence, played once again by
Billy.
William Zabka.
William Zabka. Yeah.
Let's call him William because it sounds more professional.
Yeah, Billy. My friend Billy Zabka.
I always want to get him confused with Billy Blanks.
Yeah.
Because Billy Blanks was also a semi decent action star of the 90s. Yeah. Created Taibo.
Yeah. It's,
he's in Japan now. He's huge in Japan. You're going to Japan, right?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
They had Billy Blanks.
They had really. He was big there. I didn't know that.
Oh, he's big there now. He moved.
He's big there now.
Yeah, I believe he moved to Japan.
Are we talking about the same Billy Blanks? He's the guy, the Taibo guy.
If you have the will, Taibo's got the way.
See, what I remember him from was this really, really cheesy movie that my brother and I watched.
The one you're talking about. Where he played the janitor.
The first word is king. And can you finish it for me?
All I know is this is where we played a janitor.
No. Okay, I'm talking about King of the Kickboxers. Maybe some people remember that. It's a very cheesy movie with him as the villain.
No, King of the Kickbox wasn't. I think there was a Red Letter Media about that.
Oh, there was.
There probably was.
Yeah.
No, I just remember he. I saw this movie. I don't know the name of it. I should have looked it up. He was clearly a Karate Kid clone. Because the kid was picked on, and he met the janitor, Billy Blanks, who taught him how to do karate. And within two training montages, the guy was ripped and shredded like Sylvester Stallone and could do jump kicks.
Right.
But no, I think Billy Blanks...
Well,
He married a Japanese interpreter and has a child, and he's doing good over there.
Wait a minute,
actually.
That doesn't sound good. He married her as a child?
No, he married and has a child with her.
Oh, yeah. Has a child. Okay, right. Okay.
Yeah, they're fat.
Okay,
they're
that's better. That's a lot better. Yeah.
But
okay.
No, I've always liked Billy Blanks. I have begrudging respect for him.
Sure.
I don't like any of his movies or anything he's ever done professionally, but there's something about him. It's
well, I to be honest, I haven't really delved very far into the deep waters of Billy Blanks, but I do know him from that movie King of the Kickboxers that my brother and I loved as, 8-year-olds, and we tried to imitate on a daily basis.
Well, Kevin, if you have the will, Tybo's has the way. So, and for those who don't know what Tybo is, I'm not going to educate you. I'm not going to bring that up. I'm not going to subject anybody to that. But so anyway, we have Danielle, who is now a car salesman. We have Johnny, who is an unrepentant drunk and someone who's basically trapped in time. He's like frozen in 1985.
Yeah, that's one of the more amusing parts of his character is that he seems to have been literally living in a cave since 1985. and this exposure he gets to these young kids that come into his dojo kind of opens him up to all this stuff that he had no idea about. There's in this season, there's a very funny scene where he discovers the internet, which was just, it's probably the funniest scene in the entire season. And, it's maybe a little bit far-fetched that he wouldn't have discovered the internet, but I don't care. It's just such a fun scene.
But to be fair, though, it's funny, right? It's very funny. It's a very funny montage. But it also plays into the story because his unfamiliarity with the internet, how the internet works, actually, again, no big spoilers, but it comes in the final shot of the season with a big reveal that we may be getting another character from.
Right.
The,
you mean with Allie Mills Facebook, she accepts his friend request.
Exactly. Because apparently if you hurl a cell phone towards the ocean, it destroys it. That's the assumption because it never
well, worked. I mean, it's, I don't think he was trying to destroy it. He was just he's just sick of all this, he's dramatically throwing stuff.
He likes to throw stuff. Yeah, he likes to throw things. Like, I'm going to throw this booze, I'm going to throw this, and I'm going to throw this phone.
When you're sad, you got to go to the beach, you got to drink some hard liquor, and then you throw stuff at the end before you get in your car and you drive drunk. But, that's basically, it's just how he feels.
Can we just say that in 80s-style action machismo movies, the mm-hmm. beach is very cathartic.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You can contemplate on it. You can walk on it, sadly. You can train on it, and it can affect you. The beach is everything.
This is a comparison that I never thought I'd make, but in a way it's very Fellini-esque. If you have watched any Federico Fellini movies, they always end up on the beach, and he has this thing of like, this is where the path ends. You get to the water and there's nowhere else to go. It's kind of like the path of life. Eventually you just end up at the beach.
I think with action movies, it's more about cheap shooting locations, but
probably, yeah.
But the beach might as well be a character because the beach comes up many, many times in this season as well, as both Daniel and both Johnny both contemplate their lives on the beach and have revelatory scenes on the beach.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're in the valley, I guess. Is that I don't even know anything about the valley. Is that close? I guess that's close to a lot of beaches.
I will say this for anybody who's never lived in California. I lived there for a while, a long time ago. Is that literally when they say beachfront property, they mean it mm-hmm. because there's an entire it's the coast, and so you can drive. When you're talking about the valley, Reseda, you're talking about Malibu, mm-hmm. All those places. I don't even know. But you throw a dime and you hit like 1,000. You can drive from Santa Monica to San Francisco, completely bordering the ocean, and it's one of the most spectacular and refreshing drives you will ever take. And you go through this one city, and I forget the name of it. It's all garlic. So if you're a vampire, don't do this. It takes about six hours. But it's all beach, and you just drive past like hundreds, if not thousands, of these little tiny cities that dot everywhere, and it's the culture. And when you look at, I think Cobra Kai takes place in Reseda, right? And Reseda is basically a very typical city that if you that part of Southern California, it's almost nondescript because there's just so many of them.
Right.
There's so many, and they all look the same. There's no skyscrapers because it's California. You know,
right.
There's none of that. It's just it's well populated with people, and it's, you know, I was thinking about that too.
This made me want to go to the Valley. I guess the Karate Kid did too. You know, I watched the Karate Kid so many times growing up, and I guess somewhere in my head I was like, yeah, I got to go to California, even though I don't like. I don't know. I mean, it has that great opening where he leaves Newark. You know, I mean, that's like the opening shot of the mm-hmm. movie. Is it just gives you this? You know, it has to. It's a fish out of water tale to some extent, so it just gives you the context right off the bat. He's, you know, kind of a loudmouth Italian kid, you know, from Newark, and you know, he goes out to the Valley where you have all these blonde, you know, jocks and you know, rich kids essentially, and he clashes up against them. But it did make me want to go to California. Was I wrong in that impulse?
Let's just give credit. I had to look her up real quick. I didn't want to get the name wrong. The actress Randy Heller, who's also back in season two, plays the mom. She's back.
Right.
And
she looks great.
She, she looks a lot better. I actually didn't almost recognize her because I remember she was on Mad Men for like a couple episodes, and she played the elderly woman. But no, it's when you go there, you have to remember when Karate Kid came out in 1984. This was the height of what you'd call Reaganomics, where America was in this unparalleled just surge economically. And there was that what we call the pull of California. Like, you need to come to California. California is the place. That's why there's so many movies take place there. So many coming of age stories take place there, because you weren't ashamed of being successful. That's why the mom moved to California, was to try to make a new life for herself.
Yeah.
And it doesn't exist. It doesn't. It's entirely a made up movie convention, but it works in the spirit of the movie. And I got to tell you something. I'm not going to lie to you. The song I played at the intro was the original Bananarama song, "Cruel Summer," mm-hmm. which, big spoiler, comes into play in Cobra Kai season two. It's also in the original Karate Kid movie.
Yeah.
It's the tie back to the original movie in a way that, again, you've already spoiled it a little bit because you're like, you hate this audience. But to me,
I don't hate what you're talking about.
You hate all five of my listeners. No,
yeah.
but I love all five of you. It's not the amount. It's what you do with it.
The quality, not the,
quality, not the quantity.
Motion and the whatever.
I would love quantity as well. Cruel Summer from Bananarama, which is a great song, by the way. It's one of those prototypical 80s songs that sounds sad, but it's very happy. And if you ever watch the video for it, it's just a pure happiness. These girls are having fun in New York,
dancing around,
stopping rednecks and dancing with cops. And
yeah, no, it's a song about, they're alone during the summer, but it's just such an upbeat, danceable tune. It did appear actually twice in the season. There's like a remixed version, a redone version, which, you know, I'm sort of a curmudgeonly dude. Whenever I hear a remix or something, I'm like, just use the original. But, you know, to appease people like me in the series, they used the original and then they used the cover version at the end. And the cover version actually works really well. It's a good version.
It's a good version. And it's on sale on Amazon, by the way, if you want to buy it. I forget the singer's name. I believe it's one of her only songs, but it's there. It's there. It's 99 cents. So I will say this, though. Going back to Cruel Summer for a second, it ties it back into it, and it really struck me because I went back and I watched some scenes from the original Karate Kid, and they used Cruel Summer to introduce, to fully introduce when Daniel gets to meet Allie with a Y.
With an I.
Allie with an I.
Yeah,
and he had met her before, but that's when they like, oh, what's your name? Allie with an I. And that's a callback. And that's when things really start.
Yeah, they reference that actually in the second season. They introduce a character named Tori, and she says, I'm Tori with a Y.
Yes.
So there's a bunch of little, there's like, you know, there's so many little, you know, subtle things that they laced into the season. And, you know, sometimes you can overdo that, like you can overdo the referencing the old thing. But the way they do it is just so much, like, I can't hate it. It's so much fun. And
it can be done poorly. And when I think you and I don't know if we've talked about this extensively, and I don't want to get on a soapbox. People have referenced the Star Wars movies as a way of not doing it well. And specifically the newer films like The Last Jedi and Solo. And I have you seen Solo?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Some people have tried to make it into a meme, but the way they used Han Solo's dice, for example, was so, if you spoiler, if you haven't seen Solo, which a lot of people haven't because it was a bomb.
I did see the movie, but I forget what part that is. Just refresh my memory.
It's like, because everything in the Star Wars universe needs to be explained. Like you need to run into every character. Every character needs a backstory, like it's The Simpsons or something. But they make a point in The Last Jedi and even in Solo to talk about Han Solo's dice. It becomes a thing, like the story of the dice. It's going to come back. I don't give a shit about the dice. And the problem is that I didn't want to know about the dice. And when you see it, it's not clever and it's not fun. It's fan service in a way that's designed to manipulate in a way that I don't think is satisfying. And I don't think it adds anything to the character. I think it's Wikipedia trivia.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, the difference with Cobra Kai is that, to do that well, you first of all have to have something going on other than the callbacks. You have to have, you know, something that's engaging and interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the centerpiece of the story. And then you can bring the callbacks in just as a fun little thing, you know, and you do it in a nice kind of fun way at the right tone and at the right time. But there has to be something else going on. And so yeah. A movie like Solo, where maybe there's not as much going on in terms of the character and you know, the character arcs and it's like it's going to stick out a little bit more and it's going to seem like kind of cheap because it seems like, wow, they're just trying to amuse us with this callback stuff and there's nothing else, you know.
Well, but you know, it's funny though, real quick. And another thing is that you have things like Solo and prequel movies and flashbacks, they're trying to explain the past. But with something like Cobra Kai, this is taking place in the future. So in the callbacks are more in the present time.
Right.
So they're not like, remember this, remember when. Because I want to get your opinion on this one, because I have a complaint about Cobra Kai, Kevin, but I don't think it's a complaint. I think it's more of an observation.
Sure.
Again, going back to Star Wars, people say you have Star Wars, you have the whole galaxy, and yet everybody keeps running into each other. Everybody, it's the same. Everyone's related.
Right.
It's like everyone's related, no matter what planet you go
right,
to.
Right, right, right.
Someone's brother or sister. Cobra Kai totally does that too. Everybody's
yeah.
related. Everybody knows each other.
It's that's the kind of the I'll be honest, like the sort of dynamic with Johnny's son, you know, he's Daniel's student. I kind of like, to be honest, I didn't really think that was totally necessary. It does add an interesting sort of like element, and they give you a reason for it that makes complete sense. But at the same time, yeah, I'm not so much into that sort of stuff. And it's something I've noticed also online with Cobra Kai is that everybody's always talking about how are they going to bring back Terry Silver or Mike Barnes. Maybe Mike Barnes is related to so-and-so. Maybe Terry Silver is related. And it's like, to me, it's like that stuff is fine when you have something else going on. So it's like, for me, like the most important thing is the story. You have to have an engaging story with the characters that you have, and you have to have interesting character arcs. But it seems like sometimes people focus on that sort of like, you know, 6 degrees of separation thing a little bit too much.
I like how you're saying 6 degrees. It's more like,
it's more like 1 degree. Yeah. One degree. Yeah.
It's like every character you see in there is somehow related, or the cousin or the brother. And can we just say it? The character we're talking about, the Tori with a Y, the daughter, and I forget her name. She's the badass who shows up. She shows up the boys, and she quickly becomes a love interest. Everybody and their brother thinks that she's the daughter of Allie. And
yeah.
Everybody. In fact, she introduced the same way. Like I said, the music, The Cruel Summer, is introduced at the right time. It's almost foreshadowing. But if that turns out to be the case, I'm okay with it, because everything in this show has been completely predictable as far as like familiar as far as familial connections. Like, oh, the son of him is going to be trained by this. We've seen this before. The movies Creed did it. You know, right. it's very predictable. But like you said, it's enjoyable predictability because, let's be honest, the original Karate Kid movies were never that subtle. They were pretty...
No. I mean, yeah. They've always been... Of course, I love the Karate Kid, one movie. That was like, for the longest time, that was my go-to movie when I was depressed. I would drink beer and rewatch The Karate Kid over and over again.
Like Johnny.
exactly like Johnny, yeah. Like he watches Cobra Kai, he watches Iron Eagle. Yeah, that's his go-to movie to drink and watch. So for me, I was Johnny only with The Karate Kid. Sorry, I forget where I was going with this. Where what were you saying before this?
Everyone's related, and you know what's funny? And you made a mention of this in your video too, and you mentioned this specifically, so I'm going to bring it up. These characters seem trapped, like almost on like this Malthusian world where the only memories they're permitted are the old movies, because when they remember something, we see clips of what they're remembering because their memories are our memories of the movie. And yeah. And I love it when they try to reimagine it from a different, like a Rashomon view. Like, oh, Daniel was bullying me. They showed a clip from Karate Kid on the beach. But it's like the scene when Kreese comes back. Of course, the main baddie from the first one, Kreese, the teacher, who's been gone for 35 years. When he comes back, there's that scene when they show the shard glasses when he punches into the car windows and destroys his fist. And of course, what does Daniel say? How's your fist? How do you know that? It's been 35 years. Like everything that's mentioned in Cobra Kai is directly referenced into the movie. That's their memories. Their memories are only from the movies. There's nothing else. They talk about nothing else. All they talk about is this one karate championship that happened 35 years ago, and they can't get over it.
Well, Johnny can't get over it. I mean, that's in a way that's sort of his character arc. I mean, they made his character arc be kind of like, well, he's this guy who he peaked in high school, essentially, like probably, mm-hmm. some people do. He's essentially the guy that was like, he's in Napoleon Dynamite. He's the uncle character. Like, man, I could have been the thing. You know, essentially that's what they made Johnny's character. He's a guy who. He had this thing going for him in high school, which was karate. And then, he lost this tournament and he just kind of went downhill from there.
Did they not have tournaments the next year and every year after? Was there not like 35 other tournaments?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we're meant to believe like he kind of quit karate because, I mean, it's not that he just lost the tournament. Also, his sensei. Basically tried to kill him in the parking lot, tried to choke him unconscious.
That would ruin someone's day.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we're meant to believe like after that, he was just like, he was done with karate and he just tried to move on with his life. But for whatever reason, it didn't work out, probably because he was harboring a lot of, anger and a lot of, just self-resentment. Anyway, so that's like it's funny because like, we haven't when this series started in season one, we hadn't seen him in 35 years. He could have been anything because, we haven't seen him in so long. They could have gone any direction, but they went that direction with him because it's just more interesting. So for him, he's still focused on it. And, Daniel, he's had more of a life. He's got, he's got.
Did you ever watch Married with Children?
Yeah, a little bit when it was on.
You know, the character Al Bundy and. Yeah. Al Bundy's married with kids and he feels like he's a shoe salesman. And all he talks about is throwing the winning touchdown in the high school football game. Like that's the biggest moment of his life. And that's Johnny's character.
Essentially. Yeah. He's a guy
except he lost.
Well, he was the champion for, I forget how many years, for a couple years before that. So I think we're meant to believe that everything was just going great for him at that point. And then all of a sudden him and Ali broke up. He goes to the beach and he sees some skinny asshole, putting the moves on Allie. And this infuriates him because even then he can see his perfect life. I'm a karate champion with this beautiful girlfriend. He could see it all starting to fall apart. Mm-hmm. And then to make matters worse, the one thing that he knows he's great at, which is karate, he loses. And then his sensei, who was like this adopted father to him, tries to kill him. You know, so basically he's at this point, he's lost his girlfriend. He's lost his everything.
That's the Rocky thing. Like,
yeah.
Rocky's permitted a do-over, but none of the bad guys are. Like, Rocky can beat Mr. T. I mean, sorry.
Right.
But Mr. T doesn't get a chance to reclaim. You see what I mean?
Well, I guess, you know, it's an interesting way to go into it, and I guess they do it to some extent with Creed as well, and Creed 2. Mm-hmm. You know, they give that redemption to Drago, and it is interesting because, you know, I think in the 80s, you know, things were more simplistic. There was, like, you know, good guy, bad guy. You know, the bad guy is a douche. The good guy is the hero. And at the end, he defeats the bad guy. Bad guy goes away. End of story. But the kind of way that is, I think, more interesting to come back to that stuff instead of just redoing the same thing over and over again is to kind of take a different perspective, because every, you know, story has two sides. Every, you know, everybody has their own perspective in the way that they view things. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason why that video, Daniel is the Real Bully, have you seen that YouTube video? It's called about...
Oh, it's not just a video. It's a phenomenon.
Like, right.
It's been the center of TV shows. It's YouTube videos, you name it. Yeah.
In a way, I almost give that video credit for sparking Cobra Kai, because I think that made people realize that, you know, there's still this interest in the Karate Kid, and there's a new way into it. And that's essentially what the showrunners of Cobra Kai did. And they kind of even referenced the video at one part. There's a scene in the first season where Johnny tells his side of the story, and it's a lot like the Daniel is the Real Bully video. So just for the record, I don't think Daniel was the real bully. A lot of people are dead set that they do think Daniel was the real bully. The creator of that video has acknowledged that it was satire, I think. But basically, the point I'm getting to is that, like, things were you know, black and white in the 80s, and a nice way to go back into it now is to just acknowledge that everybody has their own perspective. Nobody thinks they're a bully. When you're inhabiting the skin of a bully, you think you're doing the right thing based on your own experience, your own perspective.
Well, that's the whole concept behind fanaticism. Is
right.
That what makes a person a fanatic is that they think they're in the right.
Sure.
And I know, if you've ever read or are familiar with, like, what is it, Alexander? Well, what's his last name? I'm so bad today. I'm so sorry.
I'm
Albert Camus. I'm sorry, Albert Camus. When he rewrote the myth of Sisyphus, right? And
right.
Of course, we all know that Sisyphus has been whatever, and he rewrote it as a reversal, where Sisyphus was now the hero of the myth instead of being the fool. And I thought about Sisyphus when I was watching Cobra Kai 2, because you have these characters that are trying to move on from this one moment in their lives 35 years ago, and yet, like dominoes, it gets reignited. Johnny rebuilds Cobra Kai, which in turn causes Daniel to create the Miyagi-Do dojo, his own school.
Miyagi-Do dojo, yeah.
And at one point, I remember at one point Daniel's wife just says, "Will you stop?" Basically, she says, "All this about karate. Stop talking about karate, because it's all they talk about." And they get far. They get students. They go far, and then they fall back. They go far. They fall back. Like Sisyphus, they fall back into their default. And no matter what they do, no matter what Johnny does, it ends in tragedy. Even when he tries to do good, he can't win. He tells them no mercy. Bad. He tells them show mercy. Bad.
Right. Well, his path is not a straight line. It's winding, and he keeps going on the, you know, which in a way is part of what makes Cobra Kai so interesting, is that, you know, things are not a straight line. There's, like, you know, they're trying both in this season, basically in the first season, it was really all about Johnny. Johnny was the main character, and Daniel was sort of a secondary character that came in, and we were really following Johnny's story. And then the second season, it's more of a balance between Daniel and Johnny. They both have equal story arcs, and they're both trying to figure this thing out, because, you know, what occurred between them reignited this whole thing where they're back into karate now. And so the rivalry is reignited, but none of them are clearly the hero or the villain. It's just a winding path for both of them, and they make mistakes and they try to figure it out. They try to find, you know, the balance, as Daniel would say, he's obsessed with balance. That's, like, at the heart of Miyagi-Do. But yeah, which in a way is more interesting. And Johnny, yeah, you're right. It does seem like, especially this season, things ended up, you know, things at the end of the first season, he realized he had taken the wrong path because he had essentially turned his students into bullies, which he realized at the tournament where they fight his son, Robbie. Miguel does some underhanded stuff and Hawk does some underhanded stuff. And so in the beginning of this season, he basically tries to set them straight in his typical mean Cobra Kai way, you know, his no mercy way. He tries to set them straight, but it kind of creates a divergence in their thinking.
What was that line he said? He's like, you can still be badass, but you have to be fair.
Right. So it's a conflict within him because like the whole ethos or the whole philosophy of Cobra Kai is developed by this guy, John Kreese, who becomes a character in the season as well. And we really learn what makes him tick a little bit more in this as well, too, in that what makes him tick is that he's a soldier who is essentially used to fighting for his life in a situation, you know, he fought in Vietnam. And so he's used to like fighting for his life against an enemy that will show him no mercy. And if he doesn't do it, you know, if he shows mercy, then it could potentially end up getting his fellow soldiers killed. So he essentially took that philosophy and he applied it to these kids in this dojo, which is that he's just, everything to him is a war. And he makes several references to that in this season, you know, his viewpoint that it's a war. This is, in a war, you can't be nice. You can't be, you can't be polite, you know, you're fighting for your life. And that's the way he views everything. But Johnny, he doesn't follow that exactly. And in this season, he sort of realized, like, I don't actually want to turn my students into bullies. I'm not, you know, I didn't want to be a bully. I don't want to turn them into bullies. So it is a confusing thing for him. But, you know, and he kind of at the end, he, you know, it just goes completely, well, okay, I don't want to spoil it, but yeah, he has a hard time in this.
Well, we can get into spoilers before we end up, but I will say the introduction, of course, like you mentioned Creed 2 and again, I think we're both big fans of the Creed series. And,
sure. Yeah, absolutely.
For all its faults, for being predictable and continuations, it gets one major thing right and almost perfectly, which is the redemption of the bad guy of perspective. And it's funny to me that both Cobra Kai season 1 and Creed 2 came out within the same year. And if you know, and you and I have talked about this, the Rocky and the Rocky series and the Karate Kid series have a lot in common and their histories are intertwined in very interesting ways. Both from directors to creators to music.
That's right. And yeah. Same director of Karate Kid and Rocky. Yeah.
Same composer.
Right. Same composer. Yeah.
And even just unrelated shared musical history, again, with songs like You're the Best Around, which was actually written for Rocky III, but it was rejected. According to Wikipedia, it was rejected. But at the same point, though, you also had Survivor, who did Eye of the Tiger, would do the main theme for Karate. They're very related. And to see both of these franchises come back within the same, you know, within the same few years and fulfill the same cinematic destiny in a very similar fashion is very interesting to me. And I think
it is
right.
Yeah. It's interesting to me because for the longest time, I mean, you know, you and I were both kind of, you know, up there in age, you know, that's going to sound like we're
old.
like we're not that old, but we're up there. We remember the 80s. Let's put it that way, as you know, from our childhoods. And, so for the longest time, when they tried to reboot things like throughout the 90s, early 2000s, it would always be just a disaster. You know, and it got to the point where you just took for granted that if they tried to reboot this old, you know, this old classic property, that it was going to fail. And so I think a lot of people assumed Cobra Kai was going to fail because it's like, what, they're redoing the Karate Kid? Yeah, it's, you know, they've tried this stuff, this thing, you know, this before. The more they try to revive something, that's just the worse it gets.
They had tried to revive Karate Kid twice.
Right.
Once with a soft reboot with Hilary Swank.
Right.
And you know, the original Pat Morita himself, Mr. Miyagi, didn't work. Although it did give us a good soundtrack. The soundtrack for the next Karate Kid was actually pretty good. And I like the Cranberries. But
yeah, they have that scene. What is the scene with the monks. I barely remember that movie, but with the monks and they're it's the cranberries.
Monks like to dance.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
And you know, she would go off to become a multi Academy Award winning actress.
Right.
And one of my favorite Clint Eastwood movies. If you haven't seen it, I'm not going to spoil it for you. But it's not the
Of
movies. Not the happiest of movies.
No.
Million Dollar Baby. But I will say, and of course the Jaden Smith Jackie Chan one. And I know.
Right.
You know, we talked about Jackie Chan a little bit before. We both have mutual respect. I like the Jackie Chan version, but I don't love it. And I like it because it's more realistic and more respectful to what karate is and kung fu. And because you have Jackie Chan, of course. And
So just for all the martial arts nerds out there, I have to make a distinction that karate and kung fu are. They have a similar lineage, but they are two different arts.
which was actually part of the fun of the movie is that the movie is called Karate Kid, but it has nothing to do with karate. It has everything to do with Chinese kung fu and spiritualism and meditation. And they're almost, the name is almost a trapping. I would almost wish they had called it something else.
Yeah, that's part of the thing. That's one thing that I think right off the bat that I didn't like was that they called it they kind of justified because the Jaden Smith character has done karate in America, and so they call him, when he goes to China, they call him the Karate Kid, I think like once, but he studies in kung fu, and you know, all the fighting is kung fu. But I think if they were going to do that, they should have just had, you know, a little guts and called it the Kung Fu Kid. It's just that they were so set on getting that name recognition.
They wanted the name. Yeah, that's what they wanted. And but I love Jackie Chan's performance.
He's great in it. There's the scene where he talks about his son, you know, losing his son. It's one of the best acting scenes I've ever seen Jackie Chan do.
It's what Arnold Schwarzenegger used to call the acting.
Right.
He comes in, he does the acting, and he goes home, and he does more of the acting. Like a verb.
The acting.
He's verbing it. But I will say this.
Yeah.
But I don't love the movie for those exact reasons. I don't love it because when you go back and watch the original Karate Kid or the original, or not the original, but maybe the second and the third and the fourth Rockies, Over the Top, which gets referenced in Cobra Kai, you watch a lot of these 80s action movies and they're so overly sentimental and so overly predictable that that's a special type of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
That is hard to learn to love, but once you love it, it becomes irresistible.
I know what you mean. Yeah. And you know, to me, the I do love a lot of like cheesy movies. I guess a lot of them are movies that I watched as a kid, so it's like it has that nostalgia factor. Somehow that allows me to forgive the cheese. And it's harder for me to do that with newer movies. When the 2010 Karate Kid came out, I was already, you know, an adult, and it was harder for me to kind of like, you know, enjoy the cheesiness of it. Although there, let's be honest, there are cheesy aspects of the Karate Kid, the first one, you know, which I absolutely love and I do not fault at all. So maybe I didn't give that one as much of a chance as I should have. Maybe it's a little bit underrated. But there was something about it I didn't like.
You're talking about the 2010 one, right?
2010
2010 one had no cheese. That's the thing.
Oh.
It played it straight. And that's what I was saying. It said it played it straight as a straight drama. And it played it like a real movie. And it reminded me, Kevin, of when I would hear people talk about movies from the 80s like Total Recall, you know, Paul Verhoeven's Total Recall. Oh, we wanted a better actor, you know. And people said, "Oh, if we only had a better actor, if we only had this, it would have been a better movie." And then
years
later,
we had a better actor.
Yeah, it's like they got that though. They got what they wanted. They remade RoboCop. They remade Total Recall. They had the better actor. They had all this stuff, and it stunk.
Like, and get your ass to Mars.
Yes, they don't. And the people, and that's when people, you realize that people who review cinema and review movies, they look at it like it's a checklist, like it has to have these things.
So I got to do, okay. I'm just doing the Arnold impression there, but okay. So this will be something fun. Can you do an impression of anybody that's like a good actor?
No,
Okay, so okay, I was gonna compare those lines, like, okay, hey, get your ass to Mars. Compare that to somebody who's a good actor, you know, hey, get your
Exactly.
ass to Mars, you know, in a serious tone. I mean, is that really better, the
Well,
better acting? Like.
because they don't, it's like when people review movies and they always talk about the scripts. Oh, the script is bad. The script is bad. Look, I love scripts, but a script's not a movie. The script is not a movie. The movie is everything else. It's the acting or the lack of it, or the sound, the direction, the camera angles, the fun, the satire. None of that stuff is necessarily the script. It's all interpretation. And the 2010 Karate Kid movie was more like a straightforward movie. And like I said, I loved everything. I loved the aesthetics of it. I loved the acting. But it didn't have that cheese. It didn't have that cheese. And I don't think cheese is bad. And I wanted to bring this up to you because
Sorry, I misinterpreted what you were saying
oh,
before.
no, that's okay. Everyone does it. Everyone says that about me. They but going back to though, it's I keep reading reviews and they keep saying Cobra Kai is better than it has any right to be. They keep saying that. Why?
Because of the track record of attempted reboots. It was so before Creed and Cobra Kai, it was so bad that, like I was saying, we just as people just assume, like, oh, they're going to try to reboot that. It's going to be horrible. It's going to be garbage.
I don't know if
And
it's a reboot though. I think they might be talking about the source material's bad. Like they hold their noses a little bit about the source material. Like
I don't know if that's it. I think they just kind of assume that if you take this beloved property or you know whatever it is from the 80s, you know, or the 90s or the 70s, there was just for the longest time there was an assumption that if they were going to try to redo it 20, 30 years later, it was going to be bad. That was because that was just what had happened so many times over and over again. And to me, it's amazing that they're turning that trend. It's like when I first
Yeah.
saw Cobra Kai, I was like, you know what? I think writers are actually getting better because they've actually learned from the mistakes of all these failed reboots.
Maybe that's why we've had reboots as fertilizer, so to speak. They but you know what's but they said the same thing about the Creed movies. Like it has no right to be this good. Da, 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 da. You know, they're almost apologetic. Like their brains can't process it. Their brains can't process the fact that any movie you see, right? Any movie that you watch has the potential to be great, despite its lineage. Like I have this conversation with people all the time. I said one of my favorite movie franchises of all time, hand on heart, no joke, Nightmare on Elm Street. One of my favorites of all time. Good memory. And
How many are of those are there?
officially,
I
I
don't know.
think you say officially because we don't know if we count New Nightmare as an official one. I do. And I certainly don't count the horrific reboot, which also came out in 2010. And
I think I checked out after Dream Warriors. I think there was one.
That's my point. Dream Warriors is the third one. It's the best one. And but it's not the scariest one. Like people will talk about the first one very fondly, and they'll talk about the third one very fondly. And some people, you know, others will have like so-so memories of the others, and some people will really like the seventh one, which is the reimagining of the franchise. And the fact that we can have these conversations about ways, and you would appreciate this, so we could cinematically tell this story about Freddy Krueger. And but the argument was always, why is this franchise so successful? And the answer is the core, Robert Englund. And you take Robert Englund out of the equation, and for all the other impressive parts, and again, I want to go back to Dream Warriors, the Nightmare on Elm Street 3. That is the rare instance where everything about that movie was running on all eight cylinders. Everything was chumming along, and I think it totally deserves all the accolades it gets. But you
But
take them out.
it was a different type of movie, and I think that is part of maybe plays into a little bit of what we're talking about with Cobra Kai is that like part of it is like you can't just do the same thing with different, you know, with a different villain and a different. I think for the longest time, people wanted to do essentially the James Bond formula where it's like new villain, new girl, you know, or new, you know, it's like you just change the and then it works every time. But for a lot of things, it's it they aren't built that way. Like if you try to re just do the same thing again, it's not going to work. So I think with Cobra Kai, they came in through another door, another side of the story, and that's what made it work. And to some extent, Dream Warriors was like that because it was a different type of movie that than the first one was,
No,
from my
Absolutely. The character of Freddy Krueger in the first movie and the third movie are entirely different.
Right.
Entirely different. In the first movie, Freddy Krueger is genuinely terrifying.
Yeah.
In the third movie, he's hysterical.
Right.
And when I remember when they rebooted it back in 2010, they took the hysterical, oh, let's go back to the scary. No, we've gone past that.
Right.
We want funny Freddy. You know, if you got to have a serial killer who's a child molester, child killer, and all this stuff, you got to make him funny.
Yeah, because otherwise it's too real. And,
I don't want to root for a Salvus. But
yeah.
But yeah, going back from Freddy Krueger, though, and going back from Ralph Macchio and William Zabka and all these characters, I think it's safe to say for those, even if you really, really like The Karate Kid, I think by the time the third movie came out, the formula was done.
Right.
Like that particular way of telling that story was exhausted.
Yeah, even, you know, it's funny. I enjoyed, I mean, the third movie is, the third Karate Kid movie is entertaining, but it's, I don't by any means think it's a good movie. And, you know, it's kind of sad because it was actually written by the same guy who wrote the first one, Robert Mark Kamen. But for me, you know, it was like he was trying to come at the story from a different angle, but it didn't completely work. Although, you know, I have to admit, I do like Terry Silver. He's so much fun to watch. I mean, he's
everybody
so over the top.
They all want him back. I want Elizabeth Shue. I want Elizabeth Shue, and I want him back. He was in Cobra Kai season two, but only in that one weird flashback from the third movie.
Right.
But by the way, you mentioned the screenwriter Kamen. I did not know this about him. Did you know he created both the Transporter and the Taken series?
I know he's done. Yeah, I think I forget all the movies that he wrote, but he's a big action guy. Like he's done so many. He started so many action franchises.
Big Luc Besson.
That's right. He worked with Luc Besson. Yeah, I think did he work on? No, he wasn't on The Professional.
He was.
He was. Okay, yeah. Was he the writer of The Professional?
Either the writer or the co-writer. It's vague who gets credit for them.
Right.
But I would argue that The Transporter and The Taken have redefined action movies the last 15 years. Like completely.
Absolutely, yeah.
Both of them, completely. In fact, I've told you this before. I think the only legitimate, one of the only legitimate movie stars out there, besides maybe Tom Cruise, is Jason Statham, and it's entirely owing to the fact that he could carry a franchise as ridiculous as The Transporter.
Yeah, something about that British that Cockney accent that just it just works with cheesy action. I don't know.
But when you take him out of that, when they try to replace him with someone else in that series, it didn't work. Because it needed the personality.
Yeah.
And I remember, not to get back into Dweedy, but I've seen many interviews and I've read many things about how Kamen very much lobbied, going back to the original movie, for Pat Morita.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, the studios wanted, was it Toshiro Mifune, right?
Right.
But they thought he was too stoic. You thought he'd be too, you know.
He wouldn't have the same sense of humor. You know, Pat Morita, of course, was a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, he was on Happy Days.
Yeah, he was on Happy Days. You know, he was basically a comedy guy. And then they gave him this sort of serious role. But the role does have, you know, moments of great comedy in it. Like, so I think they got the right guy because he was able to, you know, pull off the seriousness, but then also the humor.
Oh, yes.
Whereas, humor is a harder thing, I think, to pull off for most actors. Like some, you know. There's a lot of actors that can be serious, but to be legitimately funny and to have the right comedic timing is a little bit more rare, I think.
I didn't know they wanted Mako for the role. I love Mako, right? But I don't know if Mako would have been right for that. I think Morita was a bolt of lightning. And what's really funny is that nothing he really did before and nothing he really did after was quite as lofty or as memorable as that. And it was almost sad to sort of see Morita devolve into mediocrity after. It hurt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, how old was he? I mean, he was fairly old when he took that role.
He like 50, 60? Like he wasn't.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like.
I mean, it was a great highlight for him, you know, his career.
Did he win the Academy? He was nominated for the Academy.
Nominated, yeah.
Yeah. And, but it's just, you know, it's so funny when you see stuff like that. It was because he didn't talk with that accent. Like, it was all affected. And mm-hmm. I actually watched that documentary a few years ago. I don't know if you've heard about this.
It was The Real Miyagi.
Yeah, it was interesting. I really liked it. I want to recommend to anybody, watch it. seek it out because there's some really great behind the scenes footage.
I forget the guy's name is Kimura. What is his name? Demura. That's it. Demura.
Yes, and who seemed like a great guy too.
Yeah, no, he was a very interesting guy. I watched that that documentary, and he you know, is definitely a legitimate karate badass that basically went to America and introduced America to a lot of what America knows as karate. Just the visually the concept of it was a lot of him bringing it. Interesting guy, but actually Robert Mark Kamen, he based it's very interesting because like I did some research into his background, and the Karate Kid was very much from his own story. Like he was a kid that was obsessed with karate as a kid. He studied at a bunch of different schools, and he based the Cobra Kai style off of a school that he went to, although he, in this interview I read, he doesn't actually name it, but he said it's sort of an exaggerated version of a certain school he went to, which I'm sure was an extreme, karate that was, happening in the 70s. And then eventually he went to, he met a sensei who, I forget his name, but he is a Goju Ryu practitioner. Goju Ryu is like a Okinawan style of karate, and then that's what he based Miyagi-Do on, and Mr. Miyagi on was this sensei in that style.
You know what's funny? If you go back to the 1970s, you watch Enter the Dragon, of course, with Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
And for that movie is much more influential than anybody would ever give it credit for, because there are people who don't treat martial art movies as legitimate film; they treat them as sort of a genre only. And right. you can sense that when you watch things like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Oh, it's beautiful, and so it's legitimate. Mm-hmm. Like they don't see the other side of it. And End of the Dragon is one of my favorite movies of all time. But even as a kid, I could recognize something in that movie that is hard to appreciate now. Is the fact the lead actor was not Bruce Lee, it was John Saxon. It was a white guy who had no martial art training, who looked like he was from a schlub. And I love John Saxon, also, by the way, in Nightmare on Elm Street.
That's right, I remember that, yeah.
But he was the token white guy because the other two leads were Asian and black.
Well, I think, originally it was, I think they had, at the time that they made Enter the Dragon, it was an American-produced film. They were still hung up on thinking that an Asian star couldn't sell tickets. So they kind of put Saxon in there as insurance, like, okay, we don't know if this whole Asian thing is going to work. So we're going to put this white guy in there. But of course, when you watch the movie, it's so obvious that Bruce Lee is this phenomenon, yes. and everybody, just pales in the light that he exudes,
Well, I thought about that because that show's on TV right now called Warrior. And if you see Warrior, people who don't know the history of it, not to get into Wiki on us here, but there were two shows being developed at around the same time in the late 60s. There was, of course, what would become Kung Fu, mm-hmm. with Dave, which would go to David Carradine, and Warrior, which was essentially almost the exact same show.
Yeah, it was based on. I think Bruce Lee helped develop it, and it was the intention of him being the star. And of course, again, they were like, no, he's Asian. Oh, okay. Let's get David Carradine in there, and we'll say he's half Chinese or something. I don't know.
And I love Kung Fu, by the way. I love that show.
I keep hearing. I guess people now sort of scoff at David Carradine playing a Chinese guy, but I still keep hearing things about that, the writing being very good. So I do actually want to go back and watch it.
It's on Amazon Prime if you can watch it. It's
okay.
I will. And then Kung Fu, The Legend Continues makes no sense whatsoever. So I won't talk about it, but I will say this. So when you watch End of the Dragon, you see Bruce Lee is the real star and John Saxon's the token white guy, for the audience surrogate. But here's the thing though. If you talk to people in the black and Asian communities, they were the ones who really got the most out of Enter the Dragon. And because they saw themselves represented in ways that they had never seen before. And there's that great scene in Enter the Dragon where Jim Kelly is teaching a karate class in the ghetto. And he's leaving to go to the tournament. He gets stopped by the cops and he kicks the crap out of the cops.
Yeah, I always like that scene because he basically kicks the crap out of the cops and then he steals their cop. So he's basically driving down the street in a stolen cop car. But it's like he's such a badass that he doesn't care. He just beats the crap out of them.
He became a star after that.
Yeah,
but he became like a blaxploitation kung fu star. And if you know the history a little bit too, the history of martial arts and black culture in America. Mm. Was intertwined there in a way that
difficult
for white audiences to fully appreciate, I think.
Well, I think part of it was, you had the movement of what's called blaxploitation films, which were these sort of somewhat low budget movies where, they would black producers would put a black lead in there and make him, the awesomest guy. And then, to sort of, flip things, they would have, stupid white people in there as the secondary, the secondary character, so because those were actually showing at the same theaters as the martial arts movies, there was, sort of this like exploitation crossover.
Exactly. I want to go into real quick because I want to mention Chuck Norris, because Chuck Norris at the time was a legitimate martial arts star. And even he was the foil for Bruce Lee in his big hairy chest.
Right.
And he was such a foil that he killed him in two different movies using the same footage. But
because he used the Game of Death.
Game of Death.
Yeah. it's hard to count that. But,
Game of Death. Please, if you're listening to this, go watch Game of Death because it's hysterical.
It's hysterical. I mean, until the actual part where you see actual Bruce Lee come on screen. I mean, and for me, it's like that also emphasizes how good Bruce Lee was, because that entire movie, Game of Death, you're just like, oh my God, this is so bad. And then as soon as Bruce Lee comes, like he runs up the stairs, as soon as he's running up the stairs, it's like you don't even see his face, but you just immediately, it's like you get the energy just comes at you. Like you just like, whoa, whoa, and it's like the Bruce Lee energy hits you. And then he looks up and it's like, oh shit, that's the real, that's the real Bruce Lee.
And it's gone. It was gone. It's sad. But
yeah.
But white audiences didn't have that. They had Burt Reynolds, they had goofy hillbillies. And then what I think Karate Kid did more than anything else, Karate Kid was white America's Enter the Dragon. It reintroduced karate and kung fu or whatever, martial arts, into white America in a way that became palatable.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's, Daniel LaRusso, I mean, he was sort of, he was kind of like an immigrant sensibility, but also the reason I think it was so accessible to everybody was, part of it was just that he was such a wimp. I mean, like, I'm looking, like, physically, you look at the guy, like, pretty much everybody thinks they can take Ralph Macchio in that movie before he starts learning karate. He's just this skinny weakling, and I think that was sort of like the surrogate for everybody feeling like physically weak. And then he just learns this karate and it just gives him control over his life. Control was taken away by these bullies, and then this art and I'm trying to think of the right word for Mr. Miyagi, but this wizard
come on, say it.
Comes into his life.
No, just say it. Orientalism.
I wasn't going to say that, but
it's Orientalism. If you go back to the 60s, there was Americans in the West. They did a lot of that Indian mysticism, with Zen and, not only just Zen, but, the Beatles, and the idea that transcendentalism, meditation and lots of pot would help bring you to the next level. And what Mr. Miyagi represented was a more stable, more grounded version of this. And I think by the 1980s, America's relationship with Japan, and this cannot be understated, had repaired itself to the point where the two countries were symbiotic in a way that I don't think we have anymore. And Japan at the time was an ascendant economy thanks to America. Mm-hmm. And when you look at this, when you go back and watch any 80s movie, Japan...
I'm just thinking about all the people commenting. We shouldn't say thanks to America, but a bunch of things happened.
I'm going to say thanks to America because, in a way, here's the thing, though, for
I know they sorry, go on. Yeah.
Yeah, America basically parked a bunch of battleships around Japan and said, no army for you, but you can make all the cars and export them all you want. And the economy of Japan transferred from a warlike country to a economic powerhouse because the entirety of the country was dedicated towards rebuilding its economy. And
it's also it's a combination of the Americans came in and they restructured the constitution. Japan still has the same constitution that it had when General MacArthur came in and occupied it.
It is starting to change a little bit. Like Abe, I know they're trying to change it to allow Japan, because Japan doesn't have a military, but they have that form of the military. I forget what it's called.
It is now, I don't know, what is it? It's like 60 years later or whatever, finally changing somewhat. The thing I was going to say is also there was the Japanese work ethic, which is, truly impressive. That also helped with...
Legendary. Let's just say legendary.
Yeah.
When I say thanks to America, I guess what I'm trying to say is a symbiotic relationship.
Right.
And in a way that was very different than most other... I don't want to say... Because they weren't colonized. They were occupied briefly, and then once America was the 1950s, and when you have that sort of thing, and it's just interesting to me. And you and I had talked about this offline before. We both have a love for the Japanese author Yukio Mishima, a man who was himself a nationalist, and he was very depressed. And if you know the history of Mishima, which I know you do, this is a guy who turned to bodybuilding for self-confidence and athleticism. Right. And that reminded me a lot of the story arcs in Cobra Kai before we close up, is that you have these characters that depended on the system, depended on capitalism, depended on their jobs, depending on school, and they're miserable. But when somebody comes along and ignites that athletic spark in them, their confidence level goes through the roof. And the problem becomes, how far does it go? Does it go too far and you become rotten? You become true Cobra Kai, as Daniel would say, snake in the grass. Or do you have that balancing act of Miyagi-Do? And that's what's so interesting to me about the Cobra Kai series, is that it doesn't shy away from it. And again, we'll get into spoilers here before we close up. Real quick, the one thing I want to bring up real quick to you, and I want to see if you agree with me or not.
Sure.
The tone of season two, I'll be honest with you, it was a little different than the tone of season one.
Yeah.
There were three things that didn't really work for me because, again, for those
the praise of season two is not unanimous. There are some people that think it was a little bit too much drama. I liked it. I also recognize that they couldn't do the same thing that they did in season one.
I thought the opposite. I thought it was too much comedy. And I'll tell you why. Because Hurwitz, Kate Schlossberg, and Josh. These are the guys that brought us Harold
Hot Tub Time Machine. Wait.
Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yeah.
By the way, William Zabka in Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yep.
But
I saw him mention that in an interview that they basically wrote that part for him in Hot Tub Time Machine, and then they wrote this part for him, which is the part of his life. I mean, this gives him so much more of a dynamic than Karate Kid ever did.
This was a guy who 10 years prior was doing, was basically making fun of himself in music videos.
Right.
but when you look at it, you have two characters specifically that just don't fit in this universe, but they fit in the Hot Tub Time Machine universe. It's the character of Paul Hauser, the AKA Stingray, the schlubby stand-in for all those 80s nostalgia nerds.
Yeah, like I mean, not to mention any names, but maybe maybe people talking right now.
But you look at it, it's like people who are wearing, like, he's basically a schlubby hipster. It's like, the 80s rock, it's like, I want to remember 80s, Metallica, 80s. That character doesn't fit in this universe. At any point in time does he not fit in this universe. It's just, it takes me out of it. I'm like...
I get that. I did laugh at his character a few times, but I understand it's a little bit more slapstick. The tone is a little bit more slapstick than kind of the humor was.
Especially during the last episode. It just doesn't fit. But... And then there's the character from season one that Gianni, DiCenzo as Dimitri, the whiner. He doesn't fit in this universe. And I get why they're there. I get why these characters are there. Redemption and all this. I get it. I get why they're there. And the third one that bothers me was Robbie, William's son. The actor's fine, but it's his hair. The hair is from 1994. And
yeah, I think people call him a member of Hanson or something like that.
Yeah, like Mbop.
It's funny actually. The hatred for the vitriol for Robbie is online is pretty powerful.
It's something like out of a time capsule. It's like it, and I'm watching, and they had that scene when they're fighting in the freezer, and it's slow motion, and the hair is all in slow motion.
Yeah,
and I'm like this. Your video said it looked like a White Snake video, right? That's what it looks like. It looks like a slow motion hair metal band. It's like, if I'm fighting you, Robbie, I'm going to grab that hair because it annoys me so much. It's so silky smooth. It's too good.
If he wanted to win more fans in the next season, he can do the Zen Buddhist thing and shave his head. Then maybe more people will like him.
The hairstyle's obsolete. No one has that hairstyle anymore. It's like remember that Jonathan Brandis movie that was essentially just a copy of Karate Kid. In fact, it was Mako was in it. What's that movie? Sidekicks with Chuck Norris.
If
this kid Robbie was in that movie, you couldn't tell. Because the hairstyle is 3 years out of date.
He looks exactly like a guy in Boy Meets World. There's the character
That's
in Boy Meets
exactly
World.
Exactly what he looks like.
Yeah, yeah. He's pretty much his twin.
Which is funny because the actor is from the spin-off show of that show, Girl Meets World.
Oh, really? Okay.
So maybe it all comes together.
Maybe that guy had some sort of offspring. Maybe that's who that actor is. Offspring of Hanson and the guy, the long-haired guy from Boy Meets World.
All I know is that's my biggest beef is I thought it took me out of it. And if we can get into the final thoughts. Mm-hmm. So we've been kind of spoiler free, but let's get into the spoilers real quick.
Okay, sure.
So the final episodes. The final episodes, everything comes to a head and it all results in a climactic all out brawl, which is actually a highlight, I think, of the season.
Yeah, I thought they, you know, for kids that a lot of them are not trained martial artists, they did a pretty good job in that fight scene. I mean, it's so long.
Yeah, if you've seen Daredevil on Netflix, imagine that, but with teenagers.
Right. Yeah, like 15-year-olds, and it's pretty crazy. You know, I thought you know, because the first season wasn't really. I mean, they did have the tournament at the end, but the first season wasn't really an action-based show, but you know, they decided to kind of bring this huge action piece to the end of this series, which is pretty impressive, you know.
And let's just be honest, the Karate Kid movies, despite the name Karate Kid, have never been known for good choreography.
No, and it's funny, actually, I mentioned that in one of my videos. I did a video about why Mr. Miyagi is the best mentor character ever. And I will argue with you about that if you want. But anyway, in that I mentioned that you know, the choreography and the physical performances were actually not that great compared to like what Jackie Chan was doing at the same time. And I got some flack for that. But they did have Demura, the guy we mentioned earlier, stood in for Miyagi in some scenes. But in the scenes where it's actually Ralph and it's actually Pat, you know, it's pretty obvious that they're not really trained martial artists. But the thing is, it doesn't matter because that's not what the movie is about.
Exactly.
It's about the relationships and the acting, and they pull that off.
There's a reason why they were all waxing on and waxing off and hitting nails, because they couldn't do karate.
Right.
And that's fine. And that's fine. I get it. That's the cheese part. I buy into this. I'm buying what they're selling. It's reassuringly safe in a way. You know, what's the term that's overused now? What's the word that people overuse when they talk about Star Wars, when you're disrupting, what is it called? Subverting expectations.
Right, yeah.
It's like, if I'm playing chess, I don't question why the pawn can't go, you know, sideways up three spaces, because I accept the limitations of chess.
Yeah.
And the idea is to make the most of the limitations. And the same with Karate Kid. I fully embrace the limitations. And I think what makes Cobra Kai so enjoyable is that the show understands these limitations and it doesn't try to be something it's not. It's not full of unnecessary language. It's it feels at its best, it feels like the original movies.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, it's actually, I think the tone is different, but it's a tone that works for, you know, what it is now. You know, they took this world and these characters and put it into a new tone that somehow fits and works now. But it's sort of a balancing act, the series, and there's so many different, you know, aspects to it that they're sort of, you know, the plate spinning. And I feel like they did strike up a really good balance, which is much like the Miyagi-Do training style is to have balance. But I do feel like the showrunners, you know, it's funny.
Miyagi-Do training, you mean yard work.
The yard work and the, and going on the boat and getting, you know, Miyagi, you know, rocking the boat and having you fall in the water. I feel like, yeah, there's the humor, there's the drama, there's the, you know, the old world or the old characters and the old dynamics that playing with. There's all these different, you know, elements that they're working with, but I do think they strike up a pretty good balance. If I had to be totally honest, I would say I liked season one better than season two.
Oh yeah.
But I still really enjoyed season two.
There's, again, it's all in the follow-up, and I think if we're going back to the last episode where you get the climactic, let's just say, brawl, and I don't think it correlates, but it legitimizes, and it makes you confront philosophy in a way that I don't think a lot of other shows do, where, again, spoilers, one of the characters, by all appearances, may be paralyzed, and
right.
or not paralyzed, or almost dies, in effect proving Kreese, the bad guy, correct, and proving...
Right.
And proving Johnny wrong.
Right. They kind of flipped. I mean, this term from this series, they flipped the script, which is, uh-huh. you know, in the final confrontation between Robbie and Miguel, Miguel has been training in this no mercy style Cobra Kai. And Robbie has been training in this, you know, merciful balance style Miyagi-Do. But yet at the end, Miguel is the one who shows mercy. And then Robbie shows no mercy. So, you know, so they kind of like do the exact opposite of the training that they're doing. And it kind of proves Kreese's point to some extent, because if Miguel hadn't, you know, hadn't stopped fighting, had broken his arm or, you know, or did whatever he was going to do.
Grab
the Hansen hair, then he would not be paralyzed. So in a way, Kreese's war philosophy, you know, this is all a war and you can't give your enemy anything, you know, it was actually applicable in this case. And that's interesting because they can take that, you know, that allows them to go into the next season and find out, you know, what really works, the Cobra Kai style or the Miyagi-Do style. And, you know, I think they prove that, yeah, the Cobra Kai style is extreme, but it does have its application in certain situations, which they demonstrated at the end.
Absolutely. And you know what's funny about that last battle? You notice how obvious. See, this is the part I'm talking about, the cheese. Clearly, the characters started pairing off with their duplicates. You had the
right.
the chubby kid fight the chubby kid. You had the nerdy right. little right. kid fight the little kid. By the way, that was funny.
Yeah.
Like, there was a scene.
I think there was a bit of Bruce Lee versus Chuck Norris in that.
I was going to say, but it's you have to buy the fact that these kids are all badasses, and you have these two skinny little 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
And they try to, you know, the music makes, and then the security guard comes by, just picks them up. They're like,
yeah.
You know, but then, you know, good old Stingray comes in, and it just doesn't, like, it, to me, it reduces the drama.
Yeah, he is a little bit over the top. You know, I think they should rein him back a little bit.
Not in a good way over the top. Not
yeah.
Wrestling.
Yeah, not the movie. They actually referenced that movie.
Several times, I think.
Definitely once. They talk about it. Yeah, over the top. Sorry, I forgot where we were going.
I realized thinking about you know, Sylvester Stallone's rippling muscles, arm wrestling is distracting. Mm-hmm. Going back to Cobra Kai, I will say that, you know, I can forgive the movie those mm-hmm. lapses into absurdity. I can forgive it mm-hmm. because if you just block it out, the rest of it's really good. And
yeah, it's by no means like there are things you can critique about it, but overall it's a good time and you should watch it. It's definitely, you know, for any Karate Kid fan, it's like, I don't see how any real Karate Kid fan could not like Cobra Kai. I mean, it's just so much fun and it's so interesting at times, you know, and I think it's great, and I hope they can maintain that quality in the seasons to come.
I will see, and again, they have announced there will be a third season, and
yeah.
So we're at least getting that, and who knows how long this will go on. Hopefully not forever. Hopefully that they'll realize there's an end point as well. But I would say, I agree with everything you said, Kevin. I think for a show that no one would have ever imagined 2 years ago to come in and to somehow occupy a space in pop culture that I think most TV shows cannot. I say TV shows, but I don't know what we're in anymore. I don't know what this would qualify. It's not a TV. It's a continuation of a movies franchise that ended 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And yet it somehow works. And alongside the Creed movies and to some extent the Star Wars movies, that these things would not exist without the source material and the time lapse between them. And I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because as you mentioned, when we grew up, we had to deal with remakes. And, you know, we need to remake it for a new generation. But now we see continuations.
Right.
And the continuations generally have been pretty good.
In this era, this, like, you know, mid-20-teens or whatever you call this era, I mean, they've been turning a corner where they've figured out how to breathe new life into these old properties and continue them, yeah, and make something that is not just a repeat, but something that is new and engaging and fresh. And somehow it takes the stuff that we love, that old iconography, and just works it into something that, you know, is actually engaging and not just nostalgia.
I will say this, final thought, is when we're going back to Cruel Summer one more time. Mm-hmm. And if you remember that scene from the original movie where, again, Daniel meets Allie and they're playing the song, and there's that scene when you see the kids working out and they're playing and everything, and you realize that they're just high school kids. And inside this story is another drama of Daniel and William and Cobra Kai and Mr. Miyagi. And one thing that struck me as very astute is that when I watched the new show, especially during the last episode, I felt sentiment that I hadn't felt for a long time. I felt like, wow, we're going back into this world, and we're going back into this world, and the kids that were kids back then are now parents, and some probably grandparents.
Yeah, and sure.
For anybody who grew up in the 80s, there was a brand new radio station called The Oldies. Remember that? The Oldies. And they'd play songs from the 50s, right, in the early 60s. And it's like the baby boomers ruled over everything. The baby right. boomers had control over everything. And that's why we had tons of the Lone Ranger and Tarzan and all this stuff added to them. And what's interesting when I was watching Cobra Kai is that I didn't feel that the story of Daniel and William was oldies. It felt fresh in a way. And I thought to myself, maybe the reason why it's so successful is because these filmmakers are not trying to impose these characters on these kids. You know, because right. let's be honest. I don't think a bunch of 15-year-olds are going to get all hot and bothered over 60-year-old Ralph Macchio, which he's almost 60. He's almost 60, by the way. He's almost 60.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, yeah, they figured out a way, you know, that is, you know, it fuses that. I don't know. It's very clever how they did it, you know. But yeah, they figured out a way that is fresh and that is, you know, it takes the old story, the old storyline, the old characters, but it just makes it, I don't know, it makes it, you know, new and fresh and engaging. It and something that people who have no idea about Karate Kid could enjoy. Somehow they pulled it off.
And I think as someone who delves into, like you said, iconography and the history and storytelling, it's interesting because we don't have any other real examples of this happening in pop culture the way this has happened. And I'm hoping and praying that they leave Back to the Future alone, because Back to the Future had Elizabeth Shue, and right. by all accounts, Elizabeth Shue is probably going to come back.
Probably, yeah.
I think all the signs are good that Elizabeth Shue will be rejoining the Karate Kid universe at some point.
Well, to be fair, you know, the best Back to the Future was the first one, which was not Elizabeth Shue. She was the replacement, I guess, for Back to the Future 2.
You know, and you know what's funny? You mentioned a few seconds ago that you said you like Cobra Kai Season 1 better, and I agree with you. And when people talk about Back to the Future, they all say that the first movie is perfect, but people love the second movie.
Sure.
And they love it for all the reasons we talked about, is that it literally put a new spin on the original movie. And it did it, you know, it did it within a few years in a movie, not like a TV show 35 years later.
Right.
And I think that's why it's so beloved. And I think it's able to do that. And I think with Cobra Kai when you have characters that are literally showing you clips of the original movie as their memories. It's sort of a tongue-in-cheek and saying, yeah, this is our memory too. Like I said, this is our memory too. We're going to do our best to honor this. And I think I agree with you, Kevin. I think beyond all measure, I think you would have to have a heart of stone to say that it's not successful.
Right. Yeah, it's. I mean, like you were complaining about earlier, it's better than it has any right to be.
Well, I will say this: I don't like it when people say that.
Yeah.
like you and I grew up in the age with unrepentant schlock, right?
Right. Right.
Garbage. Like we didn't know we weren't sophisticated enough to know we weren't supposed to like this. We just liked things.
Right.
And here we are, you know, approaching our middle ages and approaching 2020, and the schlock is now being reborn as legitimate. And I'm okay with that, as long as they honor. I don't want to see a realistic version of Toxic Avenger, but you know.
Yeah, I don't think you have to worry about that. Although they are doing Swamp Thing.
Yeah,
let's save that for another.
And
another
apparently,
podcast.
It's erotic. So
okay.
So that's all I can say is erotic Swamp Thing. They tried it with Bigfoot. So,
there's a market for that.
There's a market for anything. This is the internet. Yeah. What's it called? Rule 47? What's it called?
Say it again.
What's the rule on the internet where everything leads to porn?
I don't know. Yeah, I've heard of that, but I forget what it's called.
It's as old time itself. And with that, we have been listening to our good friend Kevin from YouTube Story Dive. We have been talking, spoiling, ranting, reminiscing, and fawning nostalgic, waxing on and waxing off over Cobra Kai Season 2, the very successful second season to YouTube Red, whatever the hell they're calling it, YouTube's Cobra Kai reboot.
The YouTube you have to pay for.
Or if you wait a while.
Yeah.
And very successful second season, left us wanting more, not disappointed. Even the disappointments weren't that disappointing, I would say.
No, and they were by no means things to dwell on.
And if you're going to do nostalgia bombs, if you're going to do it like Cobra Kai, because it does it well. I will put a link in the notes to Kevin's a deconstruction and spoilerific Easter egg-a-thon video of Cobra Kai Season 2.
You can watch my analysis of Cobra Kai Season 1 called Cobra Kai Blurring the Bully.
And if you haven't watched any of the Cobra Kai stuff, go watch the shows, then go back and watch Kevin's videos, and then come back and listen to this, and it will all make a lot more sense, because if you've been listening this far and you haven't watched this show, I don't know what to say. It's crazy. Kevin, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, Cobra Kai never dies. And with that, PopZara.com, everybody, thank you. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Cobra Kai is back where it belongs. Back on top. But the real story's only just begun.
I thought you were dead.
Cobra Kai never dies.
You've been listening to the PopZara podcast. Tell your friends. Tell your enemies. Just tell people about us. And don't forget to tell them that Spiffy sent you.